Well, good Wednesday evening, everyone, and welcome to our midweek services. As you can tell by now, I am not here. I'm actually doing a speaking tour across the state of Florida. In fact, I'll be preaching at Liberty Orlando this week, and we've got a great special guest, E.W. Jackson, with us on Sunday, and you won't want to miss. Thinking back to January 6th, I can remember sitting in my office just in the other room, watching the events of the day unfold as they happened. And I remember sitting there, and I'm going, I've been to D.C. a number of times, been to the Capitol many times. I've never seen police just welcome you in to the Capitol. You always go through very strict security, almost like airport security, and especially on a day when you have every member of Congress sitting there, and including the vice president, all in the same building. That would have been the most secure building on the planet, but it wasn't the case. And I remember watching it, and as I saw the events, I thought, this was a trap. That was the first thing that came to my mind. I had no background what was going on. I knew people there. We had members of our church that had gone, members of other churches that we were friends with, other pastors that I knew that were there. They were God-fearing, patriotic Americans. I knew why they were going. I knew what their intention was. I knew them. They were not terrorists, obviously. And I sat what was going on, and I thought, this is a trap. This is a setup. And of course, thanks to the great work of Tucker Carlson and just a fraction of what he has been able to reveal to the public. And there's vast other data out there, which I wish we had access to. But we've learned that that's exactly what it was. This wasn't the worst attack on America since Pearl Harbor. This was a setup. It was a false flag. And we are now basically a banana republic. Let's face it, folks, we have a government that targets political prisoners. We have a government in power right now that's targeting their chief opposition in the upcoming presidential election. We've seen absurd claims and absurd judgments against President Trump. And we've also seen what happened to those patriots on January the 6th. You know, we have got American citizens that are now in jail for over 3 years and they haven't committed a crime. You've got American citizens that are being held in violation of their civil rights, in violation of their constitutionally protected rights, and they're being denied those rights because we've become a banana republic. We've got people there in solitary confinement for 23 hours a day, getting 1 day outside, 1 hour outside, 1 hour of exercise, and that's it. They haven't done a thing. Where is justice? And sadly, we that are God-fearing patriots, along with them, promised that we would never forget. But we have. Not talked about in the news. We're busy. We've got other crises that we're dealing with, one thing after the other. Next thing you know, we rarely think about the fact that we still have American citizens being held in violation of the law against their rights in Washington, D.C. by our own government. I was so thrilled to have this opportunity to allow Brittany Perkins, a wife, the wife of Michael Perkins, who is one of those political prisoners. Brittany and Michael were there that day. And she is traveling, trying to raise money to help with her husband's legal defense and also create awareness that this is still happening, that they are still being held there against the law. And may we not forget. So I was thrilled when they reached out to us. I was even more thrilled when I responded and she was still available. And I wish that I was here with you tonight. I'm actually with you in person. I am watching you online right now from Florida because I'm so thrilled that Brittany is here. But I'm looking forward to Brittany sharing her story and Michael's story with our congregation. Then through social media and through the internet, may we share it with tens of thousands of others. But ladies and gentlemen of Fairview, on this Wednesday night Bible study, I ask you to please give a warm welcome to our very special guest testimonial tonight, Mrs. Brittany Perkins.
Thank you. Try to compose myself. I just want to say thank you all for allowing me the opportunity to be here and just to share a little bit about my husband, who he truly is, and just what we've been living through like your pastor said, at the hands of our own government, a runaway government. It's not supposed to even be there. My husband and I were saved in 2005 at a little Baptist church in our hometown. And after that, my husband got involved in the men's prison and the juvenile centers, and he would go in and share the gospel. My husband came up a pretty troubled teenager. He had a drug addiction when he was 12 to the time we got saved. He was a meth addict, and he had a heart for young men that were from broken homes and that struggled. And so he would go in and share the gospel with these young men and men that he could be in their position. And my husband was involved in our church. He did vacation Bible school. He was kind of our pastor's right-hand man. Anything my pastor needed, he would help him with maintenance. He just was a servant. And if you Google my husband's name today, it doesn't portray that at all. They have assassinated his character and made him into a monster, and that's not who he is. He's a God-fearing man that loves the Lord. He loves the Lord, he loves his family, and he loves his country. And that's why we went to the Capitol that day, because as Christians, we felt that it was our duty. We saw what was happening in our country. We saw the evil that was going on, what we're living in right now. That's what we were going to stand against, because we saw it coming. And so we felt led by the Lord to go and just make our voices heard. And so my husband, my 14-year-old daughter, and myself, along with about 15 other church members and friends, we rented two vans and we drove to D.C. And my son was 18 at the time, and he had just gotten his first little job, and we had a family vacation planned, and he couldn't go because he would miss too much work, thank the Lord, because he would have been right with his dad. So we traveled to D.C., and we went to Trump's speech, and we had no intention of going to the Capitol. We didn't know that Trump was going to say, go to the Capitol. And we went to Trump's speech, and, you know, he told us to go down to the Capitol and to cheer on, you know, Mike Pence and let him know we want him to do the right thing, and that was our intention when we went. And so we marched down about 45-minute walk to the Capitol. And when we got there, we entered Garfield Circle and walked up the sidewalk. There were no barricades. There was no fencing. There was none of that when we got there. And I don't know if any of you have watched some of the footage, but that fencing was taken down at 1 o'clock. And we didn't arrive until 2:04. So when we got there, there was nothing like that. And I would never go into a restricted area with my 14-year-old daughter. And so we went, and we were actually on the back side where the West Terrace is. And if you know anything about the stuff that happened that day, that was the hot spot. That was where all the action was on that West Terrace. So we walked up, and I had never been to the Capitol before, so I thought we were at the front of the Capitol, and we tried to get to the front because Trump told us he was going to come and speak, and we wanted to be as close as possible. And so we got close to the front, which was the back, West Terrace, and we were standing there a couple of minutes, and people were singing Amazing Grace and laughing and talking, and the next thing we know, they had thrown... The grenades at us, the bombs with the smoke. My daughter was hit with one and was choking and puking. And my husband was pepper sprayed and punched in the eye by a Capitol police officer. And during all that, we were separated, and my husband, we all had flags, Trump flags, when we went. During all that, we were separated, but my husband was convicted of a felony of an assault with a deadly weapon, and it's because of his Trump flag that he had. When he was pepper sprayed and punched in the eye, he dropped his flag. And the video that the prosecution used was my husband not even looking at the officer coming to him, but him picking up his flag, looking the opposite direction, and the flag, not the pole, brushed the body-worn camera of that officer. And my husband got convicted of 4 years for that. And that day, while we were there, we had gotten separated, and I remember seeing buses pull up and people getting off of the buses with backpacks and Trump hats. And those people didn't come from the speech like we did. We walked there. And so we witnessed people with gas masks running at people, pushing the line, you know, people into cops. And when I noticed that they were wearing gas masks and they were running away as they were pushing people and then running away, I knew then that something was wrong, that, you know, we were in a bad situation, that we had been set up. And so we went home, and immediately the media turned it on us, and so we knew that this was going to be trouble for us, that they had a plan to do something. And so we traveled home, and a couple of months went by. It was probably the end of May or the beginning of May of 2021. We were going to church on a Wednesday night, and my husband and my son, my husband had a pole barn business. He built pole barns, and a lot of his customers wanted barn dominiums. I don't know if you're familiar with that trend, but my husband built them. And so they had came in really late from work that Wednesday, jumped in the shower, and we left for church. And our church is about a 25-minute drive. I have to get on interstate to go. And I drove because my husband wanted to nap on the way. He wanted him a cat nap, so he wasn't napping in church. And I got a little ways down the road, and I noticed an undercover car in the parking lot of another church, and I didn't have my seatbelt on. So I hurry up, whipped my seatbelt on, and I got scared. I thought, oh, no, he's going to pull me over. And so that's what drew my attention to them. And so I got on interstate, and I noticed this undercover car get on with me. And at this time, I'm thinking he's just going to maybe pull me over for not having my seatbelt on and catching me, yank it on at the last minute. And but we went down the interstate about 10 minutes, and I noticed he was still behind me, and I thought it was a little weird. And I didn't want to wake my husband up because he would just say I was being paranoid and there's nobody following us. And but I got suspicious, and so I acted like I was going to get off of the interstate. And I noticed that officer went with me, and about five other cars went with him. And I was like, oh, no, something's going on. I just felt it in my heart. And when we got off interstate, I woke my husband up, and I said, honey, I think we're being followed. And he said, followed by who? I said, the cops, somebody. And so we got to church, and he told us to get out of the car. He was going to drive around the block. There was a park around the block. He was going to go drive around and see. And sure enough, he drove around the block, and there were about five or six FBI agents standing in a circle. And so that was in May. We caught them following us. I had noticed cars sitting in our neighborhood in the mornings when I walked. I walked my neighborhood, but I didn't put two and two together until this happened. So come to find out, they had been watching us since February 14th of 2021. And for 6 weeks after that, they were, because my husband waved at them to let them know that we know, hey, we saw you following us. They didn't come back. And so for 6 weeks, we were wondering and basically being tortured because I knew they were coming. I knew they were watching us. And my daughter at the time was 14. She was scared to death. She was scared they were going to kick the front door in, and her bedroom was off the front of the house. And she said, I said, well, you either sleep with me or we got to sleep on the couch. So my husband and I slept on the couch for 6 weeks waiting for them to come because I figured they would kick the door in. And two nights before they came, I called our attorney general and I said, can you please tell me if there is an investigation, if there is a warrant for our arrest? I said, I know the FBI is following us. We were at the Capitol on January 6th, and my daughter is being tortured. She's worried, and I just want to know. And the attorney general said that they would have an officer meet with me in 2 days. And in 2 days, at 5:45 in the morning, the FBI, about 50 FBI SWAT, Miami SWAT, 4 armored tanks, flashbang grenades, came and bombed my house, basically. I live in Florida, and we have really bad thunderstorms. And the night before, we had a really, really bad thunderstorm. And when we went to bed that night, I thought it was a tornado. It was so loud. And there was flashing, white flashing outside of our pool deck, where our bedroom is off the pool deck. And I could see the white flash, and I thought it was lightning and just a really bad tornado or something. And I got up and I ran through the house. And when I got to the kitchen, I seen the cop lights. And I immediately went out the front door, and it looked like something out of a movie. My neighborhood was fogged up from the flashbangs. They had lasers all over me. They called us all out of the house. They handcuffed us all, my children. They ripped my cameras off the house. They threw flashbang grenades in my home, burnt my carpets. They tore my cameras off the house with a claw hammer. And I have all of this on camera up until them physically ripping my cameras off of my house. And the reason they ripped my cameras off of the house is because they didn't want people seeing what they were doing. And that was just the SWAT team. So there was 50 or so of them. And then when they cleared my property, they were questioning me, asking me where I had booby traps. You know, I'm thinking, know how to make a booby trap. I don't know who you think we are. I don't know what you're talking about. My daughter was crying and cold and just, you know, shocked. And I was asking what was happening. And I wanted to know, was I going to jail? My husband was already taken. You know, they had handcuffed him and took him right away. And I was asking, please tell me what's going on. And one of the ladies that was helping, one of the SWAT, she was laughing, like, you don't know what's going on. And I was just like, how do you sleep at night doing this to people? Like, this is not right. You've followed us since February, and they felt necessary to do that. And my father-in-law's elderly. He lives next door, and so he thought we were dead. My neighbors next door, they thought we were dead. And the rest of the neighborhood thought that we were drug lords because why else would, you know, or that my husband was a pedophile or something, because why else do you come to someone's house like that? And when they actually found out that it was just because we were at the Capitol, they couldn't believe what was going on. My husband, like I said, was taken, and they didn't arrest me. My husband was held for 2 weeks without bond. We live in a very liberal county in Florida. And so the judges, when my husband went to court, the court marshal told him, he said, go to DC. You have a better chance in DC. This judge is corrupt and he's going to keep you here. And that was the Lord, you know, just used in that court-martial, and my husband went before a D.C. judge, and he gave him bond after 14 days. He came home on house arrest. He was on house arrest for a year and a half, and during this house arrest, the ankle monitor was faulty, and so it had a five-mile drift period, and so at random hours every single night, we got phone calls from the monitoring center. It's a third party, you know, it's not the FBI. They use a third party call center. And every single night between 3 and 5, we got multiple calls telling him he's in violation. He needs to call his probation officer that he's outside of his home. And he was in the bed. And we dealt with that for a year and a half before the judge finally said, okay, yes, it's wrong. You know, something's going on. And that was right before his trial, which his trial was in March of 2023. Is this 24? His trial was in March of 23. The prosecutors painted him as a violent insurrectionist that went to overthrow his government, that took his wife and daughter to overthrow his government and left his 18-year-old fighting-age son at home. And we chose not to have a jury trial because the jury is biased. The jury, it's a 98.9% conviction rate. They're all convicting these men and women. And we knew, you know, we were going to have the same outcome whether it was the judge or a jury. And so we chose a judge trial. And we were hopeful because he was a Trump-appointed judge. He had been appointed by Trump in 2019. His name is Carl Nichols. And we were hopeful that he wouldn't go along with the prosecutors. These prosecutors, we later found out, were George Soros-funded prosecutors from New York City. So they're out for all these people, and that's why they're getting such harsh sentences, and it's wrong. And this prosecutor particularly was very evil. She cropped a video of my husband and said that he was kicking an officer that was down. And our defense found the original video the last day of trial, and my husband was kicking a man off of an officer. He was helping an officer. And the judge saw that and did nothing about it and still convicted him. My husband had over 100 letters written about his character. His little vacation Bible school kids in the neighborhood wrote letters, and just people. I mean, he was maintenance for another church, and their pastor is an officer. And this officer wrote and said, Michael has never, ever disrespected me. He's always respected authority, and, you know, this is not his character. And the judge commented and said that he had never witnessed a man with so much community support and so much character, but he has to make an example. And he has to deter people from ever doing this again. That was the court's exact words, deterrence. And he sentenced my husband to 4 years. And it was for assault with a deadly weapon. And that Trump flag, because he had 4 misdemeanors, which were pertaining to being in a restricted area and all that, because he had a dangerous weapon, it made those 4 misdemeanors felonies as well. So he entered and remained on Capitol grounds with a deadly weapon, which is why he got such a high sentence. And the judge didn't have to do that. He didn't have to put that enhancement on there, but he did it to make an example, to scare people like me and you from ever doing anything again, from ever having another protest again, from ever standing up again or speaking out or speaking against it. They wanted to deter us, and that was the purpose of it. Since my husband has been convicted, he got to come home for 21 days after his trial. The judge gave him 21 days to come home for me to try to get his truck sold, to try to sell off some of our equipment for our business, to shut our business down and for me to figure out what I'm going to do as a stay-at-home homeschooling mom to try to figure out how I'm going to keep my head afloat and not let them take everything from me, because that's what they wanted to do to people. They wanted to ruin you. They wanted to take everything you have. And by the grace of God, it has not happened. I haven't lost anything, because God is good and he's faithful. And he's shown himself mighty in my life through this. And since my husband left here, and 21 days later, on April 17th, he had to turn himself in. And he spent 2 months in a detention facility in our state. And during that two months, he had a Bible study going with some men in there. And he had 5 men trust the Lord. And if it was just for that, it was worth it. And my husband will tell you today that he would do it again, because he's seeing God turn something bad into something good. And so he was in that facility for 2 months, and he had to go to D.C. for sentencing. And they took him to 7 different facilities. They shipped him all over the country and bussed him in box cuffs, flew him in box cuffs. He missed meals. From the time he left our state to the time he got to D.C., he had lost 50 pounds. They do something called, in our country, and it's legalized torture, and you can look it up, it's called diesel therapy. They don't just do it to the J6ers, they do it to every federal inmate. They make money off of these inmates, and it's legalized torture. They literally box cuff them and ship them all over the place. My husband missed so many meals and was literally starved, and he finally went to D.C., and he was in D.C. for 2 months before his sentencing. And thankfully, he got to go to our state in Coleman, in Ocala. And my first visit when I saw him, he had not had a haircut or shaved in months. He was about 167 pounds. And when he went to jail, he was 205 pounds. My husband was a shell of a man. And this is happening in our country because we went to the Capitol, and it's wrong. He's in Coleman now. He's been in Coleman since November 30th. And there's a lot of oppression. It's just the system. It's from the top to the bottom. It's from the government on down. It's not just prison reform. We need justice reform. From the top to the bottom. And this facility is a lot of oppression going on. We go to see him. We get 3 visits a month. We go to see him. I drive 1 hour and 10 minutes, and they say, sorry, closed today. And I have to turn around and drive home. My daughter's crying the whole way home. I'm crying the whole way home. It's just so much wrong in our society. And I don't know how to fix it. I don't know what to do other than what I'm doing. I know shining a light on it, making people aware of it, you know, bringing this darkness to light so it'll flee. That's the only thing I know to do. I say all that to say, you know, I don't want to leave on a negative note, because there's so much hope still. The Lord is still sovereign. He's still good. And the verse in Genesis, at the end of Joseph's life, when he said to his brothers, he said, but as for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. You know, these people meant evil for us, but God has over and over and over used it for good. And he's taken care of my family. You know, I haven't lost my home. I haven't lost my vehicles. You know, we haven't missed a meal, obviously, and, you know, God has been good to us, and I'm just thankful, and he's really done a work in my husband. The government thought that they would tear these men down, but what they're really doing is they're cultivating in these men some resilience. You know, my husband has grown in the Lord so much, and I'm so proud of him. And the Volkers family, they have been a very big encouragement into our life. There's a table over here, and they've put ways that you can get involved. They were writing my husband, and he told me about them. They had been encouraging him, and I reached out to them to thank them because my husband needed that encouragement. It was helping him hang on, you know, in that darkness of not being able to see us, not being able to talk to us, you know, just the depravity that he was in, you know, being locked up in the hole for 2-3 weeks, being threatened by guards because he was a cop beater, you know, just he needed that. That was just like a little bit of light that was coming to him. And so I reached out to him to thank him. And they've been a great encouragement in our life. And there's, like I said, there's ways that you can get involved. You can write letters to these men. I had printed up a paper with some facts about January 6th on it. And on the back is your January 6th defendants. You have 10 in your state. And I encourage you to reach out to them, to their families, because I know what it's done for my family. And it's helped us keep going. And these people, almost all of them have been raided this way. There's very few of these defendants. There's like almost 1,400 arrests, 224-ish that are incarcerated. Some are waiting sentencing. Some are waiting trial. Some haven't even been before a judge. But they need support. I talked to some people in D.C. when we had our trial, and they had just came back from war, the Vietnam War, and they said that people were spitting on them, that people, they had no support, and that's how these men feel in there, you know, feeling like the country's forgot about them. They went there to do good. They went there to go and stand up for our rights, to stand for our country, and they feel forgotten. And so there's ways you can get involved and just let them know they're not forgotten. Pray for them. And, you know, the Bible tells us in 2 Chronicles 7:14, if my people will humble themselves and pray, seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, I'll heal their land. And he will. And our land isn't going to be healed by Washington, by none of our representatives, because they don't represent the people. I know I live in the most free state in our country. And you know, we got 124 January 6th defendants. Ron DeSantis has not returned one of my phone calls. I've asked him and asked him, why did you allow the FBI to violently raid my home and terrorize my children and my family? Why? He didn't have to do that. Why did you let DC come and put a field office right next door to me in my county? Why? Why is my local sheriff bringing a liaison to my house and standing with the FBI? Why are they doing this? That's not what we represent. They're not representing us. And so we need to be harassing them and calling them and asking them, why? Why do y'all have 10 people in your state that have been harassed? There's a movie that they just did, the documentary, The Letter to the American Church. Does anybody watch it? The Lutheran pastor on there, the poem that he talked about. He said, first, they came for the socialists, but I didn't say anything because I wasn't a socialist. Well, guess what? First, they came for the J6ers. Don't be like that and not stand up and say anything, because when they come for you, and they're coming for us all, because that's the plan, who's going to stand for us? Now is not the time to be afraid. God says, fear not. Why do we fear? When this all happened, I was scared to death. I wouldn't talk about it. I didn't want anything. You know, I was scared. It's the FBI. It's the government. Oh, my goodness. You know, I was scared. But there's a time and a place for everything. You know, the Bible says there's a time for everything. Now is not the time to be scared. They want us to be scared. Now is the time to be bold and to be brave. And the Bible says to be of good courage and be strong, because he's with us. And if God is with us, then why do we fear? The fear of man brings a snare. And if we're going to be fearful and we're going to be silent, then we're going to fall into a snare. And like I said, I just want to thank you all for allowing me to be here. And I just want to thank the Lord for just being good in my life and for taking care of me, sustaining me, and just being everything I need right now. God is good.